This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
We're going to talk about. So tell us what's going on most recently with this case.
Well, of course, we produced, I produced and Mary Liz Thompson directed a documentary, Who Bombed Judy Barry, which, by the way, whobombedjudybarry.com is, you can get all kinds of information on it, just to put it out there. But in the making of that movie, we discovered a number of things. I mean, I pretty much knew about 95 or 98% of what there was to know, but there was a few new things that came about. And one of them was that the first FBI agent on the scene who blamed Judy and I for being the bombers was Special Agent Frank Doyle. We knew that. He was the chief of the terror division. What we didn't know was that when he retired, he got a job with Mythbusters television show as their resident bomb maker. He makes bombs on TV as a cast member for Mythbusters. And so that was interesting. So I went and purchased every single Mythbusters episode that Frank Doyle appeared on. And from there came some really valuable and interesting information because the legend of Frank Doyle, and by the way, the lawsuit had a number of names. One of the principal names of the lawsuit that we filed against the FBI and won $4 million for, by the way, one of the principal names was Barry versus Doyle. So this is not a small character in our story. Doyle taught a bomb school 30 days before we were bombed in Humboldt County, California, where I live, is blowing up the insides of cars, highly unusual, even by his own admission. And by the way, when I say his own admission, we took days of depositions and days of trial testimony from all the characters I'm going to talk about. So this evidence is well documented in writing and under oath. So he was blowing up the insides of cars with pipe bombs on a Louisiana Pacific clearcut. They were renting the land from Louisiana Pacific, and he was friends, apparently, with the chief of LP Security, who was another bomb tech guy. They were, you know, yucking it up about bombs. I'm sure I wasn't there. But the bigger point is that right after bomb school, 30 days later, the inside of Judy Barry's car got blown up. And we say in our movie, as is heard on FBI video, the FBI's own crime scene video, Frank Doyle shows up to the bomb scene and says, presumably to one of his students who we know was there, he says, "This is it. Go to it. This is the final exam right here." And so he calls the bombing of Judy Barry's car the final exam on the FBI's own videotape. So he's teaching bomb school 30 days before, blowing up, recreating basically the same bomb scene that he's going to witness 30 days later.
Now, do I remember correctly that there were particular models of car that were being used also?
No, that's not true. We don't know what model cars were used. Although I will say that a number of the people from bomb school remember so little about it that every time they say, I don't recall, I take that as an answer that is more incriminating than anything. I can guarantee you that a couple, 3 years after you blow up the insides of cars and then you go visit Judy Barry's car in the bomb site, you remember all that stuff. You don't forget what model cars. You don't forget who was there. You don't forget what you taught. So my point is that but he definitely was blowing up the insides of cars, as testified by Sergeant Wayne Hansen. Myron Hansen, sorry about that, Sergeant Myron Hansen of the Oakland Police Department's bomb squad, who was one of his students. So, back to the point, he denied under oath in deposition and at trial that he said, "This is the final exam." And we had no choice but to take his word for it because, well, you know, we didn't have the voice recognition abilities back then. But after Frank Doyle appeared on Mythbusters, and then we go back and listen to him saying, "This is the final exam," we realize that that is, in fact, Frank Doyle's voice. I will tell you on the radio right now that Frank Doyle showed up to Judy Barry's car and said, "This is the final exam." If he continues to deny that, which he did twice, admit he was guilty, and he's lying, he was guilty not just of lying about the bomb in Judy Barry's car and the location of it and the nature of it and the fact that he thought we were guilty, which he was convicted of, by the way. He was convicted of lying and violating our First Amendment rights by doing so. But it also meant he perjured himself, which starts to, if you start to see a pattern of lies, then you have to ask, well, what else is he lying about? And here's the real important point. When Frank Doyle showed up to the bomb scene and blamed us instantly for bombing ourselves, he wasn't doing this in a vacuum. He had to be taking orders from somebody else. And, of course, the somebody else he was taking orders from goes in two directions. One is to his immediate boss, Richard W. Held, the same man who framed Geronimo Pratt of the Black Panthers and put him in jail falsely for 27 years before he was released and given $4 million for his 27 years in prison, the same man who led the manhunt to capture Leonard Peltier across the Canadian border, Richard Held, and the same man who oversaw the assassination of two Puerto Rican independence leaders, among other notorious acts. In other words, the San Francisco Bureau of the FBI was headed by a political operative who trained under J. Edgar Hoover. So Doyle was certainly not operating in a vacuum, but he was operating. And so we are saying that by doing so, he was an accomplice to the crime. He was covering up the tracks for the bomber. You know, if you hide a bomber, if you run cover for the bomber, if you know the bombing's going to happen in advance, you are as guilty of attempted homicide.
So, Daryl, let's,
as the person who put the bomb in the car.
So let's talk a little more about Richard Held and a little bit more about what you're challenging the Discovery Channel program MythBusters to do. But
yes.
People, you know, I'm sure it's been a long time since 1990, and not everybody heard the interview, which covered a lot of this stuff a couple months ago, or has necessarily seen the film. So just a couple minutes on what set a little bit of the context. What was going on in 1990 that led up to the car bombing?
Environmentalism was very popular in 1990, more so than today. It was the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. There was a ballot initiative in the state of California that would have banned clear cutting. And Earth First was in its heyday. And so Judy Barry and I co-founded something called Redwood Summer, which was designed to bring, and did bring, thousands of people, a lot of kids, but people of all ages, to the Redwoods to protest for 3 months. And Redwood Summer was sort of a resurgence of a summer-long campaign based on Freedom Summer, which took place in Mississippi and the Deep South in the early 1960s. The idea was to bring outsiders into your area to shine the media light, to shine the light of knowledge to the rest of the country as to what was happening to the Redwoods, just like the people in the South wanted people to see what was happening with racism in the 1960s. We wanted people to see what was happening with speciesism, with the clear-cutting that was going on in the Redwoods in the 1980s and 90s. So we went on tour to promote Redwood Summer, of colleges, and we also were receiving a lot of death threats. We received almost 36 death threats before the bomb went off in Judy Barry's car. And we went to the police, we went to the FBI, all that kind of stuff. And Judy was not just organizing Redwood Summer, she was also a union organizer, and she was bringing loggers and mill workers into alliance with Earth First. So this is a really scary thing to the timber industry. You may remember Chico Mendes did that in Brazil. He brought the union organizing and the rainforest protection together and was murdered because of it. So Judy was really a force to be reckoned with. She had the gift of gab. She was a major orator. She was funny as get out. She was a great fundraiser. And of course, she was a world-class organizer who could bring thousands of people to various events back in the 80s and 90s. So it is in that context that that Judy and I are leaving Oakland on our way to do a Redwood Summer organizing concert. She played the fiddle, I played the guitar, we sang together and wrote songs and all that kind of good stuff. And as we're leaving Oakland, a bomb goes off under Judy Barry's driver's seat, almost killing her. It had a motion device on it, which meant the bomb would only go off in a moving vehicle, had nails strapped to it for shrapnel effect. And yet the FBI showed up, finding the motion trigger, knowing it was a booby trap that would only go off if the car was moving, and blamed both of us for being bombers whose bomb went off accidentally.
Not the kind of bomb one would rationally put in one's own vehicle underneath one's seat, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And we also had all the death threats in our files and both of our backpacks, and we had reported these death threats to the police. So, yes, no. And you know, if you go fast forward 12 years, the jury believed us. The jury said, no, the FBI was lying. They weren't mistaken. They didn't botch the investigation. They attempted to frame us for a crime that was actually committed against us.
I just want to say that I'm Paul Rowland. This is Political Perspectives, and I'm speaking with Daryl Cherney, longtime Earth First activist, producer of the documentary film Who Bombed Judy Berry, which came on tour here to Portland a couple months ago, and I interviewed Daryl at that time. And Daryl's talking from Northern California, where he's been living for a long time. And you're talking about the lawsuit that you won after long... It wasn't easy, was it?
No, Judy Berry died in the process of that lawsuit. She lived through the bombing, was crippled for the rest of her life, but she died of cancer in 1997. But our legal team and myself took it to the finish line and was awarded $4.4 million by a jury. The jury basically said that the FBI and Oakland Police violated our First Amendment rights. 80% of the award was for violations of freedom of speech, that they tried to silence us for our advocacy for the Redwoods and, you know, everything else we were doing. Well, the first guy on the scene who did that was Special Agent Frank Doyle, the chief of the FBI's bomb squad and terror division in San Francisco.
Terror division?
The terrorist division, yes.
Oh,
absolutely,
really?
Correct. Squad 13, it was called. Correct.
So kind of anticipation of the, you know, war on terror and the joint terrorism task forces and all that.
Yes, they had the joint terrorism task force back then, and I can tell you who was on it. We have all kinds of the vibe information we have. It's a fantastic, I don't even know if I'd call it a microcosm, but I don't think people, the public, has taken full advantage of the information that we've gathered over the decades, because most people who fight the FBI lose, or most people who fight the FBI wind up in purgatory. But we won, and we also have tens of thousands of pages of documents that are organized. And so I can tell you all kinds of fun facts, but getting to the point, the Oakland Police showed up first and basically thought we were victims. Then the FBI showed up in the form of Special Agent Frank Doyle and redirected all the traffic and said, no, 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 these guys are guilty of being bombers. The bomb wasn't hidden under the driver's seat. It was in plain view in the back seat. Look, nails in the back of Judy Berry's car are the exact same nails as the nail strapped to the bomb, which was completely false, by the way. No such bag of nails existed that they were talking about in the back of Judy Berry's car. Judy was a carpenter, and she had a bag of roofing nails because she was putting a roof on her house, but the nails on the bomb were finishing nails, and they were not identical by any stretch of the imagination. So it was Frank Doyle who did this, and Frank Doyle had to pay a hefty share of that $4 million victory that we had against the FBI. And one of my lawyers recently told me that if Frank Doyle hadn't lost this case, he would have a nifty career right now at $400 an hour as an expert witness in bomb cases. But because he's convicted as a liar, he can know his courtroom credibility went down the drain, and no one would ever hire him to do such a thing because he could his word is impugned.
So where did he end up? On the Discovery Channel.
Yes, he wound up on the Discovery Channel on Mythbusters, building bombs, many bombs, and blowing them up for Mythbusters. And there he is, jabberwocking away. So since Frank Doyle denied, under oath twice, in deposition and in trial, showing up to the bomb car and saying, this is the final exam, to the people who were around him, and having just taught a bomb school 30 days before, and then he shows up to Judy's car and says, this is the final exam, we are challenging Mythbusters to do this. We say Frank Doyle said this is the final exam. Frank Doyle says he didn't say it. We challenge Mythbusters to bust the myth that Frank Doyle said this is the final exam. Of course, the irony is that Frank Doyle is their own cast member. But if we're telling the truth, then Frank Doyle did more than just lie about the bomb and try to frame us. He also perjured himself twice, which is, you know, punishable by 5 years in prison. And also, it further questions his veracity as to what else he could be lying about. And so, yes, and Mythbusters, by the way, Mythbusters is based in San Francisco, and they had an earlier scandal about 2 years ago where they accidentally shot a cannonball through somebody's house and car in a residential area. A cannonball. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, but their reputation in the Bay Area it was sullied, shall we say. So we're going to question again their reputation in the Bay Area by hiring a convicted liar to be on their television show and challenge them to bust a myth about what he did or did not say when he showed up to Judy Barry's car. Because what he said when he showed up to Judy Barry's car could imply, has the potential to imply, that he had foreknowledge of the bombing. And that's heavy duty. Because he didn't, as I said, he didn't just show up and blame Judy in a vacuum. He had to be following orders. He had to be have an understanding when he showed up.
So
no way around it. And to that end, Paul, what I'm saying to you on your show, you're the first interview I'm doing on this, is that we have now reached a phase, 23 years later, we are starting to point some fingers about who was involved in this bombing with hopes of getting to the bottom of it.
So this is, you know, reality is always stranger than fiction. You couldn't make this stuff up. I think it's probably hard for people to wrap their heads around. I mean, we're so, most of us are just so far away. You know, we hear about, you know, we know something about the FBI. You know, we hear about these things that happen. The FBI has been amping up their entrapment, you know, planting fake bombs, putting people up to supposedly putting a bomb somewhere, like the so-called Christmas tree bomber here. But, you know, you really lived through this, and so you had a much greater personal stake in finding out, and you've been really sticking with this. So you really have a really close, really clear sense of what's going on that's really valuable. I was wondering, you said there's all this documentation. Have there been, you know, journalists, mainstream journalists, scholars that have been making use of it? Has there been any, you know, good writing out there that's reached a national audience?
Well, curiously, Susan Faludi, the, you know, very world-renowned Pulitzer Prize-winning feminist writer, spent 5 years working on a book, attended every day of trial, and then dropped the book like a hot potato. She just all of a sudden one day was no longer writing this book about Judy Barry. I would say the articles have been very few and far between. Even during trial, even though the courtroom was, you know, pretty full most days, I would have thought it would have been much more full. I have a theory, and it's really just conjecture, Paul, that people in the progressive movement are not used to winning, that we're somehow or other wedded to losing. We're wedded to the struggle as opposed to victory, because we won. And our trial was funny. It was revealing. It was everything you ever wanted to know about the FBI right there on display. And, you know, whereas you can get thousands of people on the streets for some Occupy demonstrations, I would have loved to have seen thousands of people waiting online to watch our trial. They wouldn't have gotten in. But where was, you know, the deep, deep enthusiasm for taking this on? And I can only have conjecture as to why this case hasn't been more held in the spotlight. And that's why, one of the reasons why, I produced a documentary, Who Bombed Judy Barry?
You know, I'm speaking with Daryl Cherney. My name is Paul Rowland for Political Perspectives. Daryl, we only have a few minutes left. And, you know, some things you just said really brought up, could go in so many different directions, but we've only got about 5-6 minutes left. But, you know, this trial in Guatemala, where Rios Montt was found guilty against, you know, it was against further odds than I think your case, but there's kind of an interesting parallel. And if you look at it, the really ugly, dirty history behind that, behind the involvement, Reagan's support for Rios Montt, the CIA's involvement, the long, long history of American interventionism in Central America and most other parts of the world, I mean, it corresponds internally to the way the FBI, you know, ever since its inception has been going after, you know, people who are trying to question the status quo, people who are raising serious questions, people who are doing serious organizing, the whole COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, which Richard Held was intimately involved in, as you mentioned, and it's continuing and seemingly actually getting worse after 9/11 and the Patriot Act and so-called war on terror. And, you know, yeah, I think you're right. People, you know, we're kind of shell-shocked, so to speak. I hate to say that to you, having experienced a bomb yourself. But, it's really difficult to contemplate. It seems so massive, but yet, you know, when you focus on a specific objective, when you're, you know, really maintained for years this campaign to bring the truth out about a specific case, and your particular case is very resonant, and it seems like there's a way that case can be used, I think, is partly what you're trying to say, to open up bigger questions.
Absolutely. And, you know, the FBI is a book that came out right now. I can't think of the name of it, but basically exposes the fact that the overwhelming majority of terror cases the FBI has, quote-unquote, solved or uncovered were terror cases that they themselves initiated. They were the ones who built the bombs. They were the ones who supplied the bombs to various activists or people of Middle Eastern descent or people in the animal rights movement. They're the ones who supplied all this weaponry. Even an Earth First case in 1989 with the FBI, who, when they busted the five Earth Firsters in Arizona, it was the FBI's car, the FBI's guns, the FBI's explosives, the FBI's, you know, thermite, everything belonged to the FBI. So they create crimes in order to solve them. The FBI basically couldn't solve a crime if it kissed them on the face. They are overwhelmingly an incompetent organization that is much better at kicking down sandcastles of political activist groups than it is at solving real crimes in this country. But before I forget, Paul, because we're running out of time, I know, May 24th is the anniversary, the 23rd anniversary of Judy Barry Day. And that is, by the way, Judy Barry Day is officially acknowledged by the city of Oakland as part of the lawsuit. We got not just money, but we also took a little less money in exchange for Oakland making May 24th, the day of the bombing.
When did they do that?
They did that right around 2004. It was my demand, Paul. So that's when we're holding the Mythbusters challenge. We're going to be in front of Mythbusters in San Francisco, kind of a far drive for Portland. But if you want to come, we have a Facebook page, Who Bombed Judy Barry, Busting Mythbusters, or just go to whobombedjudybarry.com. That's JUDIBARI.com. You'll get our full schedule of events. And anyway, the point is that on May 23rd, we're having a press conference in front of Mythbusters in San Francisco at 1268 Missouri Street. And then on May 24th, Paul, and you're hearing it here first, we are going to project the movie Who Bombed Judy Barry outside on the front wall of the building of Mythbusters Studio in San Francisco. Judy Barry is coming to haunt Frank Doyle, and she will haunt him until we get to the bottom of Who Bombed Judy Barry.
Wow, that's really exciting. So I've been talking with Daryl Cherney, a longtime activist with Earth First and a co-producer of the film Who Bombed Judy Barry. Any last words for our Portland audience?
Yes. Judy Barry was a rising environmental star, a woman star, no less. And when she was taken down to a bomb in 1990 and died in 1997, I personally felt, and I believe many others feel the same way, that it is our responsibility to solve this case for all the doors and windows it's going to open. This is not just about who bombed us, although it certainly is. This is about the bigger picture, and I really hope that you join us. If you can make it to San Francisco, great. If not, just visit our website, whobombedjudybarry.com, or our webpage, or our Facebook page, Who Bombed Judy Barry, JUDIBARI. Paul, it's great to be on KBOO. Big fan.
Okay, thanks a lot, Daryl. It's been really great.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye. Okay, that was Daryl Cherney. You heard it here first. They're challenging Mythbusters to put their own cast member and bomb maker, retired FBI agent Frank Doyle, on the program. Find out who really did bomb Judy Barry. Was Frank Doyle, did he really say this is the final exam at the scene of the car bombing? My name's Paul Rowland, and this is Political Perspectives here on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM.
For the spirit you can't kill. Barry is a feminist organizer. Ain't no man gonna keep that woman down. She defended the abortion clinic in fascist Ukiah town. Calvary Baptist Church called for its masses. Camel buddies lined up in the pews. You can see see all of their faces in the Ukiah Daily News. And they spewed out their hatred as Reverend Broyles laid out the scam. Bill Staley called for violence. Was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Barry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill?
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany. The time is 10 o'clock straight up. Coming up next is Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a full report and update on the genocide trial and conviction of former Guatemalan strongman General Rios Montt. Federal investigators secretly seized 2 months of phone records from AP reporters and editors. And part two of Jeremy Scahill's recent speech in Berkeley. And at 11, Chris Siegel and Kate Welch host The Food Show with guests Amy Stewart, author of The Drunken Botanist, Barbara Bernstein, and Elaine Velasquez on their documentary about food justice. And Sarah Berger, the lead cook for the Village Building Convergence.
KBOO Community Radio and Proper Villain Productions are co-sponsoring the 4th Annual Portland's Prom, the prom you wish you'd had, where the punch will already be spiked and curfew extends past midnight. Portland's Prom will happen on Saturday, May 18th, at the Star Theater in Portland. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. This event is a benefit for Planned Parenthood. Participants must be 21 plus. Entertainment is provided by Just People, Excellent Gentlemen, Worth, and Dimitri. More information can be found online at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, May 15th, 2013, the 65th anniversary of the Palestinian Nakba, the catastrophe that forced the Palestinian people into the status of refugees in their own land. You're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. A few headlines first. Google Palestine is officially live, drawing the usual response from Netanyahu. This will wreck the peace process. It's a consistent theme anytime the Palestinian people are recognized as people deserving of, and in fact comprising a state to be recognized by the international community. The Israeli response is inevitably, this ruins the peace process, to which most people say, well, what peace process? We're going to be speaking today with organizers and students here in Portland and on the East Coast who are leading an accelerated boycott, divest, sanction movement. We're particularly talking about the divestment issue with regard to TIAA Cref, an enormous company that does billions of dollars, I dare say, in business around the world. First, this from the National Weather Service. Today, rain, lightly, high 60 to 65, southwest winds 5 to 10. Tonight, overcast, and it looks about 50-50 as far as rain goes, lows around 50, a bit breezy, 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, the same pattern persists, highs 65 to 70. We'll have a bit of a light wind, 5 to 10 in the beginning to stir. in the afternoon. And then it's for Thursday night, tomorrow night, there's a chance of light rain and lows around 50. The alternative forecast, everything pretty much the same. The waxing crescent flower moon in Gemini is 5 days old, synodic. Leafy vegetables, grains, and not a good time to pick vegetables if they're to be stored. Biodynamic. The moon in Gemini, an air sign, good time for flowering plants. Sidereal outlook, moon in Gemini, barren and dry, and yet good for promoting flower growth. Well, of course it's good for promoting flower growth. It's a waxing moon. And that's it for both the alternative and the traditional weather outlooks. We're going to be speaking with Sarah Farahat and Jenna, other students. I hope they get other students on the line from PSU and talk with them about the movement to pressure companies to divest from any investment in Israeli companies. This was a tactic that did have a tremendous effect when people were involved with tearing down the apartheid regime in South Africa. And many people have pointed out that the situation in the Palestine is very much similar, and in some regards, perhaps even more dire. Is a very small area. These are the West Bank and Gaza, small areas. The Palestinian people, when they are under bombardment, let's not forget that the Israeli Air Force is a massive, powerful Western machine with limitless armaments at their disposal. It's a virtual ongoing year-round trade show for American war weaponry, and it is being deployed against a civilian population packed into a small area. There are no bomb shelters. When the bombs start coming in and the mortars are flying, there is no place to run. There is no place to hide. You just